From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 782, What Happened to Windows 10X, with guest Paul Thurrott. Recorded Tuesday, April 20th, 2021. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts, LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Two grumpy old guys complain about Windows. Is that's what we're doing today? Yeah. My friend Paul is back. He used to be an award-winning journalist. Now he's just an angry, angry man.
Curmudgeon.
You curmudgeon, you. But I'm I've been looking at what's going on in Windows, and I thought, I really got to talk to Paul about this. But before I do that, I also have to read a comment of our past show that we did together, which was, okay, you know, during mid-pandemic last year, July of 2020.
Yeah.
And we, oddly enough, we were talking about Windows. In fact, the opening statement on the abstract of show 705 is two old guys bicker about Windows. So there you go.
Okay.
And this, right, this comment comes from Shmuley Englard, who has been a long time listener to the show, actually.
I think I know this gentleman.
You may have encountered him. He's out of New York. And his comment, of course, we're talking about the, you know, the state of the Windows industry and so forth. And he says, one, the Insider program is better at feature feedback than bug finding, I think. Which I thought was very reasonable insight, actually, because that's what we were talking about. They need to test, and they're just not testing.
No, that has never been fixed.
Yeah, it's still not fixed. Yep. Number two, the Surface Pro is very common in airplane cockpits. I used to remember what airplane cockpits looked like, but I don't anymore. But yeah, also, like, there's a lot. It's also common in the NFL as well. Like, there's a lot of hardware around.
That's true.
And number three, and this will be the controversial one, I still can't see the web as a solution to the write once, run everywhere, and the like. Every 5 to 10 years, we make the web the platform and then fail and then try again. On top of this, I wonder if we're just trading one set of problems for another.
Oh, well, that's always the case with technology.
Inevitably.
One thing. But I would just say, with regards to the web, I mean, the web as a platform has advanced dramatically in recent years. And I do personally view it as the solution to that write once, run everywhere problem that Java was going to solve back.
Yeah. I think it's got a better shot at it. But I mean, the biggest thing the web's got going for it is the installation was already done. It was the browser.
That's right.
Right? Like, that's the main thing. It's because installing software on computers is hard. And as I get more and more sucked into the tinfoil hat old man IT guy that I'm clearly growing into, installing software on computers is also evil. So
yes,
the idea that I have a security context that I'm already comfortable with in the form of the browser, and that's where the corporate apps come and go from, sign me up, man. Like, it is super hard to argue against that.
100%. I you know, we live in a world of technology enthusiasts, so there will always be the argument that will come from a corner somewhere. Someone will say, yeah, but, and they have some specific need.
Yeah, sure.
And yeah, absolutely.
Some people like installing software on grumpy computers.
That's true.
Those are strange people, and we love them, but it's a thing.
I've updated Windows so much, it's become my career. I mean, is that what I signed on for? You know, managing updates?
This is not what your high school counselor told you you'd be doing for a living. Hey.
Well, we were talking before the show. I mean, what this all boils down to is, you know, technology was supposed to make life easier, not set you off in some separate path.
Yeah, just triggered. Where
you're continually engaged, and this thing has nothing to do with your core role.
Not at all. This is not what I was supposed to be doing today. Shmuley.
Yeah.
Haven't seen you in ages. I hope you and yours are well, and love to send you a Run As Radio mug. And if you'd like a Run As Radio mug, write a comment on the website at runasradio.com or on the LinkedIns or the Facebooks. If I read your comment from there on the show, I'll send you a mug. You've got a mug. Don't you have a mug? You must have a mug.
I still do not have a mug.
Oh,
that's okay. Now I'm not as burned about it as I was last year. I think I told you my Jeffrey Snover story. I was listening to some of your old shows and he says something about some number of mugs, and I was like, what do I have to do?
Well, I think you've also found your own source of cheesies now, so your anger level is generally lower. You're paying a premium for Amazon cheesies, but at least you get your own cheesies.
Look, I think we all adapted during the pandemic. Yes, we have to survive.
I appreciate your wife's ability to take something as trivial as Canadian snacks and make it into a really quite good article about better living. Like, I read that and I'm like, man, yeah, that's some skills there.
It's tough for me that Stephanie, my wife, is now linking to stuff she writes on Facebook, because it will just reveal me to be the fraud that I am, you know, ever more obviously. You know, like yesterday, she's on the phone all day. Like, she talks to doctors, nutritionists, you know, she
real research, people, how strange, people who've had,
yeah, actual research. And you know, I'm used to, so I'm used to this. This is our lives, you know. So I said yesterday, she said, oh, I got this and this going on. She's writing an article about introverts and extroverts. And she says, I'm talking to my extrovert today. And I said, who's that? And she says, Andrew. And I said, Andrew Zarian, the guy I do a podcast with? She goes, yeah. I'm like, well, it's cute of you two to tell me you're doing this. you're like, okay, have a good talk, you know, have a good talk with Andrew. Right?
Our significant others have relationships with our friends that have nothing to do with us.
Exactly.
Well, and with me traveling so much, it's been on occasion where Stacey has literally gone to a party with one of my friends.
One of which
happened to be divorced at the time. And then sometime later, I'm having dinner with him and another friend. And he said, hey, who is that woman you're with at Hort's party? And she goes, his wife. I'm like, well, okay. Everything's fine. We're all fine. Everything's fine. Yep. It's good. I wanted to talk about Windows X. And the X clearly doesn't stand for 10.
It stands for EX.
EX?
Yeah. You know, here's what I'll say. Okay. And, you know, you kind of presented this like two old guys complaining about Windows. I mean, let me start off on a
happy note. We don't have a choice, right? That's what we're going to end up doing.
Yeah, we've been beaten down for a few years now.
Yeah.
You know, in my career, I've looked at what Microsoft has done. And, of course, we all know the NT example. And NT was alongside Windows 3X and DOS, actually, at the time. And kind of became Windows, you know, and now the Windows we know today is NT essentially. But Microsoft has been trying smaller engineering efforts since then to streamline what they have with Windows into these other more reliable, safer, more efficient operating systems, right? Windows RT was maybe the first of those that came to fruition and failed. Windows 10S and S mode, you know, Windows 10 on ARM, and then Windows 10X. And I, in almost all of those cases, said, this could be the future. This is the next NT, you know?
Right.
And so I'm really good at that kind of thing. none of those have panned out. And there's still some hope for some of these things, I guess, still. I don't think 10X is ever going to see the light of day. And
it sure seems to be the rumor mill now running.
Yeah. So Microsoft today finally acknowledged Windows 10X. And when the news broke, this was probably less than 2 weeks ago, that they were going to kill it. Brad, the guy I work with at Petri and Thrott, Sam's, talked to Microsoft and they kind of gave him the lowdown on what they did say today, which was, we're not actually going to say it's dead, but
it's not exactly alive.
It's dead. And yeah, the way they're saying it, you can kind of, you know, pick and choose the words that are most important, is instead of bringing Windows 10X to market in 2021, like we originally intended, and by the way, they originally intended that for 2020, but whatever,
right?
We're going to leverage the things that we've learned and accelerate the integration of key foundational 10X technology into Windows 10, mainstream Windows 10. Now, they never ever talked about integrating key foundational 10X technology into Windows. So that's actually news.
Yeah.
And then they gave some really, uninteresting examples of things that maybe started off in 10X and are available in 10 today, or will be maybe in the future. Okay. But here's the thing. So, you know, Windows is what it is. You know, it is a, we could call it a traditional desktop operating system. Some people might use the word legacy. The primary app platform that sits under all apps written for Windows today, Win32, dates back now, 25 years or more?
Something like that.
Yes. And, you know, it has problems. It poorly written apps, it's the Wild West. They can impact the battery life, the reliability, the performance of the system. It's easy to install malicious software through Win32, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, Microsoft, as you know, I mean, they've been working on this forever. .NET was, and is in many ways one answer to this problem.
Mm-hmm.
Although it, when Windows, of course, sits on top of Win32. And I kind of like the 10S model, you know, the idea that we're going to restrict access to those apps. I feel like there should be an exception list so that you as an adult or an admin, we'll say, on the system can say, look, I'm on board with the security subsystem here. I just want to run Chrome, or I just want to run iTunes. Well, that's in the store. It's a bad example.
But some grumpy piece of software that is considered traditional. Oh, and
by the way, some of it's important. I mean, I have a particular brand of printer scanner combo device.
Yep.
It has this utility software I have to install. Otherwise, I can't print to the edge of the paper. I can't do whatever special features are in there. And that's a Win32 app.
Right.
You know? And so I wish Microsoft had gone down that route. My advice to them is to pursue that. But when 10X was another attempt, you know, another way. So aside from the you know, different UI and its supposed path to working on different types of devices that are not traditional PCs, which was since rescinded. Mm-hmm. To me, the core of that is the component, rather the containerization, I guess we'll call it, of the operating system, mm-hmm. right? We're going to separate the core of the OS, the UWP stuff, and then the Win32 stuff into their own containers. That's an interesting solution. This is a way to allow legacy Win32 software run on this platform and protect the platform from those apps if they're malicious.
Sure. I mean, that's the whole thing. Like, let me put those old Win32 apps in containers with very specific boundaries. That's really mm-hmm. all I actually need.
Yeah. Now, there are other approaches. You could run this stuff remotely, mm-hmm. and Microsoft is working on that as well. We know that.
VDI.
And others are. Virtual machines. You know, mm-hmm. there's all kinds of other solutions. But I looked at that and I thought, you know, if this works, that should become Windows, right? Mm-hmm. Or that feature should be brought into Windows. And when you a word like works is important because works means a lot of things. It has to perform just as well or well enough. It has to be compatible enough. You know, it can't be compatible with 70% of the apps. It has to be compatible with, you know, 90-something percent of the apps. And that was the bar they did not meet. And so the last update we had gotten about 10X, which I'd have to really think about that, maybe last November or something like that.
Yeah, December, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, they said, look, 10X is going to now it's going to be next year. We're not going to have Win32 in the first release, but we're still planning that for a future release. And again, you know, given that it wasn't going to ship on necessarily on mainstream PCs, okay, that might be okay. But that also leads to the question, well, what is the point of this thing again? What problem does it solve, right? And not for Microsoft, because the problem it solves for Microsoft is it's an answer to Chromebook, and it's an answer to this legacy stuff we've been talking about. But what does it solve for customers? You know, customers broadly, customers of Microsoft include PC makers and corporations of all sizes, commercial customers, and individuals, right? Like why would we choose this thing over what we already have, and why would we choose it over Chrome OS, frankly?
Well, exactly. If all you're going to do is try and match Chrome OS, buy Chrome OS. I mean, at least you'll be unhappy in a place that more people are unhappy.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, like a Microsoft version of Chrome OS to me is a little bit like a Microsoft version of Chrome, which is what Edge is, right?
Right.
It's that product stripped of the Google invasive stuff and then padded on with some Microsoft functionality, which you may or may not want. I happen to be okay with it from Edge. But when you compare Chrome OS to what 10X would have been, I mean, there is one crucial missing feature there on the Microsoft side, and that's Android app compatibility.
Right.
Whether or not that's viable or good or bad or indifferent or whatever, I guess everyone has their own opinion on that. I've seen mixed results there, I guess. But it is there. It is a feature they can kind of check off on a list. And I think a lot of schools in particular might have come to Microsoft and said, yeah, we get it, but
we kind of need, well, and it speaks to the valid point here, which is that this legacy of software, which is the burden they're trying to shift, is also their value proposition, right? Nobody cares about the operating system anymore, it seems, really, at least at the consumer level. They just want to run the stuff they want to run, full stop.
So glad you just said that. I want to be clear here. I am a Windows enthusiast. I routinely try out Mac OS. I routinely use Chrome OS even. I don't use Linux all that much. I have in the past. I'm gonna look into that again a little bit more this year. But I'm open-eyed about this. I know that familiarity helps. But I every time I use another platform, I want to go back to Windows. I am that person. So
yeah,
whatever you think of that, that's fine. But what you just said is true. It is absolutely true. I think for most people, it's interesting that the more valuable thing here in this equation isn't the operating system, it's those apps. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, those apps have versions on the web that are okay for some people, like the Office apps. In some cases, they don't, you know, and it just depends. And this is semi-facetious, but wouldn't it be better, generally speaking, if you could have a system like Linux run Windows 10 apps in a container, however they're going to do it, and have it be compatible and performant, than the reverse, right? Which is what we have.
I keep looking at the Windows subsystem for Linux getting better and better and better, and that capability, which mostly is pretty dev-centric, but what if the shell that Linux has been looking for all its life is Windows?
Yeah, this is how they get success on the desktop.
I
mean, you probably have more of an opportunity to talk to developers that might or might not find WSL enough of a reason to stick with Windows.
Well, what it's finding is spending less time in a Linux box, wrestling with a Linux box back and forth. It's about shortening dev cycle. It's like, hey, we're deploying onto Linux because the company likes Linux boxes in the cloud. It saves money.
That's fine. My dev tools, developer workstation, it's kind of neat to be able to run mainstream apps and do that stuff you have to do for work rather than have two machines, one for each, you know?
Yeah. And that's what ends up happening. Or you're rebooting all the time. Like, or you have multiple computers. Like, that's the battle.
That's all great. And, you know, WSL is great. They're bringing terminal to Windows. That's great. Mm-hmm. They're bringing the ability to run Linux GUI apps on Windows. It's like, okay.
That's weird.
Why? No, I mean, other than you.
Because we were really missing our Linux GUI apps. That's what
missing. What's the one Linux GUI app that, you know, you're missing in Windows?
Exactly? It's the eyeballs following your mouse around. Yeah. That's the one.
TouchRacer. Yeah. What are we talking about here? Like, what?
I don't know.
It's so weird. But, I mean, there's no reason not to do it. It's like a lot of things. I'm interested in an example where you're like, okay, yeah, that justifies the whole thing. But whatever, it's fine. They're kind of, you know, they're heading in that path. And who knows, this might turn into Android compatibility at some point, you know.
Maybe. And Paul, I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message. Your users are on-premises. Your users are on the go. Your users are using on-premises Active Directory, and they're using Azure Active Directory. In all these cases, you still have the same problems. Windows is still Windows, your apps are still your apps, your browsers are still your browsers, and your users are still your users. Microsoft Group Policy, System Center, and Intune can only get you so far before you need to cry uncle. But don't panic. You've got Policy Pack. With Policy Pack, you get the power to manage applications and browsers on Windows 10, overcome application UAC prompts, block ransomware and unknownware, and dynamically configure the Windows 10 start screen, taskbar, and file associations. Policy Pack works alongside your on-premises Active Directory and your Azure Active Directory. You owe it to yourself to see a demo of Policy Pack and then get started in just a few clicks. Learn how thousands of other admins enhance their Windows virtual desktop and remote work scenarios. Come to policypack.com to learn more. That's policypack.com. Policy Pack, securing your standards. And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell. That's Paul Thurrott. We talked a little about Windows 10X. I mean, from an IT's perspective, I'm spending a lot of time locking down these workstations anyway. Like, I'd really like to have an OS that was natively more secure. And there is a diversity of options now. Like, I think the pandemic actually pushed up Azure Virtual Desktop a bunch of notches. Like, it was just sort of wandering around for a while. But as everybody sent their employees home, and some apps just do not work through the VPN. Like, they are sad through the VPN. And you're trying to run the client on the local machine at the person's home and then VPN the communications through, not good. And so suddenly it was like, hey, I push this app into VDI running in Azure and you're just looking at it. And that, I mean, it's not a consumer thing at all, but from an IT perspective, like, that suddenly became a very viable solution for legacy software.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people who have been in Microsoft IT for a long time know that Microsoft had, through MDOP, a variety of virtualization solutions, you know, and this might be almost 20 years ago now, post Windows Server 2003, so whenever this was, but that allowed you to run, you know, virtual environments. We're all familiar with that. A virtual window comes up, go full screen. It's like you're on the computer. But also, I think a really cool ability to run just virtual apps locally, right? It's right. Something running in the background, of course. But I mean, you can bring down what appears to be an app. It appears in your start menu. I think bringing that kind of thing to the cloud, that's the last mile problem. And that's the Win32 right. problem that's described. But, you know, maybe not for drivers necessarily, but what if Windows 10S is locked down, but I need to run Chrome? I'll just make up an example. And you could run that application virtually. You know, that's
right.
one solution to the problem. It's one possible solution. And yeah, you're right. It's still something I think even, you know, for the foreseeable future, it's going to be more commercial than consumer. But I mean, why it could go consumer. There's no reason it couldn't.
No, I mean, the reason to go consumer is the ransomware crisis, right? It's just the average consumer, the security issue is only getting bigger. We're clearly outnumbered and outgunned. You know, the FBI is now running around the world fixing people's machines against their will, it appears. So, you know, and the crazy part is like that old story of, if I just use an iPad, I don't have this problem. It's like, because it doesn't have the apps, and that it had a more secure model from the outset. Because that's it's right. much younger. It's 2010.
This,
you know, that's the distinction.
This is a conversation now that goes back over 10 years about the different approaches to this kind of mobile web trends that, you know, it's been going on since the iPhone. It's like, well, do you take something big and heavy like Windows and chip away and try to create like a thinner, more streamlined, more efficient, reliable system? Or do you start from scratch with something small and add to it? And I've always kind of argued it's probably easier to do the latter. And
right.
unfortunately, you know, the platform I care most about is the former. And
right.
we've seen the legacy of near misses, I guess we'll call them.
Well, I appreciate they keep trying, right? Yeah, like the easiest thing in the world would be to do a dead drop, build a brand new thing.
Yeah.
But that's never succeeded for them, right?
I always think of Windows Vista and what a cluster that was. And
yeah.
And if you know the history of it, you know, that Windows Vista was essentially developed in 18 months and pushed out the door, and Windows 7 in many ways was Vista Service Pack 2. You know, they had a lot of work to do mm-hmm. on the performance and compatibility too, I guess. But
yeah,
the thing that bothered me about Vista, you know, wasn't that they didn't fulfill the Longhorn vision. It wasn't that, you know, the result was kind of landed hard and maybe it was bad timing, unfortunately, with iPhone coming out as well. But rather that Microsoft would not take chances in the future. You know, that this failure was so epic that it might not want to take chances. And then Windows 8 happened and proved me wrong again.
Well, again, like Vista was very much a self-inflicted wound, right? They went off and did their own thing and went kind of nuts and eventually had to ship to deal with licensing requirements. That's fine. 8 was a response to the iPad. It was a threat.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Steven Sinofsky, bless his heart, justified everything he did around the iPad represents the doom. We got to get to this. I don't think he was right, but I understand the belief. I do think the man went to work every day thinking he was saving the company.
Yeah. I look, there are many examples, and we'll stick to the history of Microsoft, where you kind of have this choice to make, and you can go one of two directions. You know, you and I mentioned Media Center. I can't remember now if it was during the show or before, but the choice at that time was, do we make it a standalone console type box like the Xbox? And you got to remember, this was original Xbox at the time. This was the very early
2000s. Not a lot of horsepower.
Or do you do it on a computer, which is something Microsoft understood so much better and could have done a better job with the software, and they chose the latter. And I think looking back on it, you think, well, you know, maybe a smaller device would have made sense if they could have done it at the time, which they probably
did. Right.
And Windows 8 is a lot like that. I mean, you see the threat of the iPad. Well, how do you respond to that? And Sinofsky's answer was, you take the greatest asset we have at the time, although it was in decline already by that point, and you make it work like that instead of doing something new. And was that the right response? I mean, they probably couldn't have made something new successful, which we know from the something new they made, like Windows Phone, that was not successful.
I also wonder how a guy like Steven Sinofsky, and I'd love to have him on that interview, looked at something like the Courier project, JLR's thing. They got all the way to a final prototype and was ready to go to manufacturing, and then they killed it. And it was genuinely new.
That's right.
So again, you're living in the weirdo umbrella that is inside of Microsoft. And, you know, you and I sit right beside that bubble looking at it going, you guys know it's weird in there, right?
We can feel the shot for sure.
Yeah, it's right there, right? You understand how the weird exists. That has to weigh on you. Hey, every time someone tries to do something from scratch around here, they get creamed. I've got to work with protecting the crown jewels, and the crown jewels are Windows at that time.
I think Sinofsky, if you kind of boiled that era down to brass tacks, the big issue there was the not invented here syndrome. He might have turned that into some kind of a endemic problem that nothing that wasn't invented here is okay. And if you know the history of this, right. You know the timing. They had a Windows Phone UX that I always thought, and to this day still think, would have been wonderful in a tablet-sized device, that you have the experiences that spread across like a panorama across multiple screens. On a tablet could be one screen, and it would be beautiful.
Yeah.
Would have been beautiful. And that could have been an application that ran on full Windows, if that's what you wanted to do. You could have had a tablet OS, and they just didn't go in that direction.
The Stacy had an accident on her paddleboard and turned out her waterproof bag for a phone, not waterproof. And so needed a phone abruptly, as you do. Mm-hmm. I powered up my Lumia 980, still holds a charge. And you know what?
It's good.
She didn't use it, by the way. She took the OnePlus over the 980 because at least it ran Android. Still a gorgeous phone. Still the best UI in the space. And you're right. Those smart tiles could have made a fantastic tablet interface. It's everything that Win8 ever wanted to be.
And you know, we can get a little more specific, you know, come down from a mile high. But I mean, okay, they didn't do that. But how do you make Windows 8 and not have it be app compatible, have it not be the semi-underlying platform? Do the thing that they try to do several years later with Windows 10. And the one Windows vision where you could use UWP at the time to write an app that would run across all of those Windows-based platforms, right?
Yes.
It sounds good. You know, it is in its own way a kind of a write once, run anywhere Microsoft, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, which is just not that many plays. It was the ultimate error. They kept using, I mean, how many times is UWP used for what was actually a different thing? Oh, no, this is what UWP means now.
Right. I mean, Project Reunion is Windows UWP on, well, optionally on the desktop. Great.
Right.
Great. You know?
Well, and over on the dev side, I look at all these initiatives as they're trying to get to one XAML again after being so fragmented.
Yes. They tried to. Windows Phone 8 was that attempt on the phone to get to one platform. Windows Mobile 10 by the time we got there, make it match up with Windows 10. It's a good idea. It would have been a good idea a few years earlier. It would have been a good idea when they started Windows 10 to maybe go in that direction. Because Windows 10, you know, I've been revisiting this recently. And if you go back and look at the original announcement, this would have been probably end of September 2014, if I remember correctly, you know, it was a return to the desktop. You know, like we might have skewed a little too much to touch first UI in Windows 8. We're going to bring back the desktop.
Fair. Yeah.
But here's this app platform, which was based on probably the WinRT app platform, whatever it was called in Windows 8. It's just another generation of that. It's like, well, that's not the desktop. You know?
Yeah.
It's.
Well, and I remember that in Server 2008 too, like that sort of weirdo dichotomy. This is a server. Why do I have icons the size of my fist on my server? Like, this is nutty. I don't need a touch interface here. There is no touch here. Stop it.
No greater side effect of the Sinofsky era than the client team taking over control of core Windows and forcing UX on server. It's just the opposite. If it has to be one way, you put the core in charge of, you know, the server guys in charge of core, you know?
Right. For obvious reasons. Hey, have you done anything with 2022, with Server 2022? I've done a couple of shows on it. You know, the Windows team doesn't talk much out in public these days. They're tough to converse with. So I'm, you know, talking to MVPs and folks like that.
But. No, I haven't. I mean, I kind of watch this from afar. So, you know, since I left Windows IT Pro and kind of went out on my own, I focus more on the consumer stuff. But I'm actually a little, and again, this is from a mile away, but I'm a little confused by the direction of server. I mean, I know that by necessity that server is going to follow a path like they did with server core, where you're going to focus on core workloads because a lot of it's going to be up in the cloud now, or you're at least going to be a hybrid install. We only need some of that stuff locally. And I get that. But if you look at how they structured the insider program for server, it's a little confusing. What's what? You know, what does this map to? What am I, you know, and they, because server releases are spread out much further than, you know, client releases, well, major server releases, it's hard to know where you're at with stuff, you know.
Yeah.
To me. So I, this is not something I look at every day, but every time I kind of dive into it because I am interested, I'm like, what are they doing here? What is this? Mm-hmm. You know, I know they have, I get it. Like it's important, but I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know how important it is.
I know. Because I don't say it's important. You're going to hear from the guys who know it is important to, right?
Yes. Yeah, definitely there are a group of people it's very important to. But yeah, we're all kind of sitting back and watching 2022 and saying, what do I need here? Security's number one. That was true last time, right? Works well with the cloud. Also true last time. You know,
like, wait, I've heard that one before. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. The bigger thing is the container story could be better, but I almost wonder if Windows containers is no longer relevant because you run Linux containers.
Right. Right.
I really don't know the answer to that. And I'm watching closely because I'm very interested. I think if they can get the client using containers routinely, so that containerization of software is just a way to go, all of that becomes more relevant on the server side, which is hilarious to me. Because for a long time, we really looked at this, if you build server, because that's the staple and reliable, and from that comes a desktop of some kind for the enterprise. But suddenly, it almost like it's reversed.
Yeah, Windows Server went from being Batman to being Robin, you know? It's just, it's a weird demotion. It's hard to understand. I mean, it's not hard to understand, but it's tough, you know, when you've been around for a while. And they used to be better together. Remember, they would release these things side by side, and the new mm-hmm. version of Windows would have features that would... But they used to say light up features for Windows Server, you know?
Yeah. Well, it was one common code base, and it's literally, you know, some switches, and you're running a desktop version, you're running a server version.
That's right.
And now I think that the differences are getting larger. It is more core centric. You shouldn't be RDPing into that machine at all, right? It's all Windows Admin Center now to configure and operate, and there's no other way to get at it, right? Or if you're brave and you love Snover, you're writing a lot of PowerShell. Like, you know,
I love
you
Snover, can go that way too. I'm not writing a lot of PowerShell. And hopefully what you're, you know, if it's a bigger company, you're going to have some dashboard that has all of your resources, and a lot of those are going to be in the cloud, and some of them are going to be local. And, great. But it's not what it was. You know, Windows Server used to be the be-all, end-all.
But I also think, aren't we just looking at the fact that the operating system is no longer the focus of the industry?
Yeah.
It's not just Microsoft. And I suspect it was actually true many, many years ago. It's just absolutely apparent now as we worry about the cloud, as we presume interoperability, we get annoyed when it doesn't happen. And we expect apps to exist in all those places. You know, the idea that Clubhouse didn't have an Android app, it's insane.
I know, that's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah. And by this time this comes out, apparently it will have ended. But still, it's like, what?
I don't know if this qualifies as insight, but we were talking to a friend from the family who's going back to school to become a nurse. And she bought a Chromebook, and she asked me a question about printing. And I said, why did you buy a Chromebook? And she said, well, I can't afford a Mac, you know? And I said, okay. I said, I have 27 Windows computers in my house. Do you want one of them? And she says, I swear to God, that's what she said. I don't really have space for that kind of thing. And I said, no, it's a laptop. It's the same size as the Chromebook. And I don't think she understood this was a thing.
No, and I think the space statement might've been mental, actually.
Yeah.
not physical.
Well, I thought that was kind of interesting. Like, you know, I was like, okay, well, let me know if you change your mind. You know, you can return the Chromebook, keep it. I don't care. I mean, I'll look up your printing. But
I am literally surrounded with machines. You can have any number. Yeah, I'm trying to downsize it. Please.
But the point of that, though, is I think to a normal person out in the world, you know, the phone is the be all and end all of everything they do. There are certain things you can't do on a phone, or they're just easier to do on a bigger screen. And some of that is solved with an iPad or a tablet. And some of it is solved by attaching a computer to a keyboard to something. I would use a laptop personally, but maybe use a tablet. And you have a bigger screen, you can type. And you can do that on iPads if you want, if that's the direction you choose. And I think by the time you get, you know, to a Windows laptop, it's like, well, you're not really anyone's first choice here, are you? You know, and that's
but I think you also speak to there's a perception of this is an enterprise thing. That's for businesses. Yeah. It's large. It's clunky.
Oh, yeah, my parents used to use that. I remember those.
Yeah, you know, I remember those.
I used that to get on AOL in the 90s, you know. That's to say they haven't changed. I think there's that perception, but you know, everything you've said so far about this kind of thing, from the write once, run anywhere aspect of the web and operating systems not mattering is absolutely true. It is, if anything, more true on Windows in some ways, right? And I think it's just a reflection of the time it came up, its longevity, and the fact that the market has gone in this different direction with mobile devices, and Microsoft doesn't really play a role there.
Yeah. And to be clear, it doesn't matter to the consumer of the technology. For us in IT, we care a lot and we need to.
Yep.
But if you ever wondered why the user keeps staring at you funny when you worry about these things, there's a reason. It's just not even on their radar anymore.
You know, I don't do IT support, so I don't want to appear to be arrogant or negligent or whatever. But we have the technology today to protect those devices and make sure corporate data is not stolen. And you can manage individual Microsoft apps if that's what you want to do. And it shouldn't matter too much if, you know, Bob over here wants to use an iPad and Mary over here wants to use a Mac, or some people want to use Windows computers and some people are doing stuff on phones. From management security perspective, it shouldn't matter too much.
And arguably, I was looking at Windows 10X with that IT eye, going, hey, is this my low touch, automatic, secure by default desktop OS?
Yep.
I'll whitelist in a handful of older apps if I need to. Everything else is coming from the store anyway.
Right.
And I don't have to go through the rituals of local admin lockdown and all of those sorts of problems, because the attack surface on this thing is so much smaller.
I mean, it's probably fair too to say today, as 10 years ago or more, I mean, there's a large audience in the Microsoft space, especially in the commercial part of it, that runs Office, and that's pretty much it. And so Windows RT would have solved that problem actually back then.
Yes.
Windows 10S could solve it today. For sure, you know, for a lot of people, for some people anyway. I hear from those people regularly, you know, this works fine for me, and that's fine. But I think, you know, IT, just like the world in general, has to be a little more flexible, you know, to support different people who have different needs or expectations.
And then you get into like, hey, you know what? Office runs on the iPad now.
I know.
And it runs on a Chromebook now. Hey, like, and so if I want a low surface machine and I'm prepared to deal with a, you know, no AD around that sort of stuff, go there.
Right.
Like we don't need to fight this anymore. It may not be relevant anymore.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you install, I use a non-domain connected Windows computer every day. And when I install Teams, you know, Teams gives me the option, like some store apps do this as well. We can manage your computer if you want. Oh, just this app? You sure? Because we can manage the computer. You know,
we're happy to help.
Literally open this computer up to management from my company, which I have to, I don't know if you've seen my company, we don't want that. So, okay. Well, that's interesting. I mean, and that's that the ability to manage an app on a mobile platform is fairly resilient and common, I would say, or, you know, easy,
right.
Not easy, maybe, impossible to implement. That's all. I don't want to undermine people's hard work here, but
Well, and I also wonder if Microsoft's not that incented anymore. That really, when it comes to that reliability and so forth, like run virtual desktop, consume Azure is like, that's their motivation, especially for enterprise.
That's right.
To just consume more Azure. That's the solution. You know, whatever's, we could be running all iPads or all stripped down Chromebooks and all this sort of thing. And they're just going to VDIs and it's all in the cloud. And that makes Microsoft happy and really answers those IT questions too. It does reduce the attack surface and so forth.
You get into some weird stuff, though. You know, the pandemic obviously triggered this massive movement of people to their homes. We're all working from home. I had huge concerns. Last year when this happened, my son was coming back from college, and I'm thinking to myself, he's going to be playing video games. He's going to be doing all this stuff. And I ran an Ethernet. I had been purely wireless here, and I ran Ethernet into my office just to prepare myself for this, what I thought was going to be a bandwidth onslaught. And the inability of RCN in my case to deal with it. And that never happened. It was fine. We didn't have any meltdowns. But, you know, if the entire world was set up to do VDI, would that have been a problem, you know, during it?
Yeah. Would that have been more bandwidth or less bandwidth than trying to do all that stuff remotely? That's a great question. I don't know the answer to it.
Yeah.
I do know from the pandemic series from last year, talking to folks like Ed Horley, that the utilization of IPv6 jumped up dramatically from work from home because the home ISPs are far more V6 than the business ISPs.
Well,
And that actually, in some ways, helped the network quite a bit.
That's funny because retroactively, that's obvious. But
yeah, duh.
That's
but it is these kind of interesting phenomenons.
Right.
I presume in the next few months, there will be the next version of the next Windows.
Yeah. So we always kind of push this back because we're never really sure when it's going to happen. Originally, we kind of figured it would be around build. The indication now is that it probably won't be. Although we did know they were going to announce what they announced today as we're recording this. Microsoft made that 10X announcement where they basically said it's not dead.
It's not even pining for the fjords anymore.
So you do that ahead of when you're going to make the good news announcement. And that makes sense. And they buried it in a big blog post about other stuff. You'd have to really look for it to find it. And Microsoft makes announcements outside of their shows, of course. Like I found it odd earlier this year when they did the second Ignite. They announced Microsoft Viva ahead of Ignite. It seemed like the thing you would – that why wouldn't you announce that at Ignite? I thought that was a little odd.
Yeah, no. I'm always savvy to the – it's a very big organization with plenty of politics internally. You know, I would argue – I don't know if the Windows team could even get minutes out of a keynote, much less a session at Build at this point in time.
Right. So,
and now when I saw that Viva announcement, my thought was, wow, the Office team, the Office 365 team lost an argument with the Ignite guys and decided to, all right, we'll just do it ourselves.
Interesting. Yeah, that could be. The other way to look at it might be that there's so much to announce in the Microsoft 365 space and specifically in the team space that there just wasn't room for, you know,
just enough.
They were running out of space.
I think all of those things are true, right? That you're wrestling for visibility and it comes, you know, and while we're recording this, Google I.O. is going on.
Right.
And so like the six products they sell, all clearly messaged. But meantime, at Microsoft, there's 400. Like, I don't know how you make one event about anything.
Well, yeah, Microsoft PR these days is structured, I think, to help the share price, right? So they talk a lot about the cloud. They talk a lot about Azure growth and that kind of stuff. And
as well they should. In the end, that's the product, right? That's the business they're actually in.
Build being a developer show, obviously Azure is going to have a big place there. But I still feel like Windows Office, you know, there's a lot going on there. Yeah. Could be, should be. And I'd have to research this. I don't remember last time that Windows played a big role at Build. It's been a while.
Yeah.
You know,
much less Ignite. I mean, it's been years.
Right.
You know, and it should play a bigger role at Ignite more than
it's at Waldo. You know, you look at the session list and you're like, where are they actually going to, you know, provide a little bit of news here? Windows. I mean,
and where are they going to talk about this?
Yeah. And it's there, but it's not much. And, look, there is a major new version of Windows 10 coming. And all we really know is that they're working on the UI, which is fantastic. It's necessary.
It needs a refresh.
Yeah. Yeah. We're still waiting. You know, we'll see.
Well, I think we were sufficiently grumpy and old this week. Don't you think?
Look, I should just say, because I don't want this to be just complete. I love Windows, right? This is.
Yeah.
The reason
we only complain about the stuff we care about. That's right.
I if this was something I didn't care about, who care? You know, I wouldn't care what they were doing wrong with Windows, but I care. Yeah. You know, I want them to get this right. So I have realistic but hopeful expectations, you know, for Sun Valley and the next version of Windows 10. I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. It'll be another time around.
Yeah.
Paul Theroux, thanks for coming back on the show.
Thank you so much.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.